we weren't really ready, but I had kind of been to a couple of headhunters in Toronto, and one of them said to me, what are you doing now in Vancouver? And I said, well, you should really start this business here in Toronto. And if you do, I've got this massive freezer in my basement that I really need to get rid of. So here's my card. Call me if you ever do anything with it.
If you've been listening to this podcast for a while now, you know that we tell founders' stories. Each week, we learn how someone from within our family of brands, that's 1-800-GOT-JUNK, Wow One Day Painting, and Shackshine, built their own exceptional businesses. If this is your first time listening, well, you've picked a great episode to start with. In fact, this episode is a little different, a bit special, because not only am I not hosting, but I'm joining this week's guest in the hot seat. You can't tell the story of 1-800-GOT-JUNK without telling the story of Paul Guy. Our paths merged over two decades ago when I first really considered franchising the junk business. Paul was instrumental in making that happen, and he was also our very first franchise partner. How did it happen? This is Paul's story.
Hi, everybody. David St. James, or DSJ. I'm Managing Director of Franchise Development for O2E Brands, and I will be playing the role of guest host of this version of Founder Story. I've had the good fortune of working directly with both of you. So my first part of my career in 1-800-GOT-JUNK was working with and for Paul as Toronto's sales and marketing manager from 2006 to 2011. And then I've had an opportunity to work with you, Brian, at The Junction since 2012 to current day.
My name is Paul Guy, and I'm a franchise partner with 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
My first question is for you, Brian. I want you to just go back in the time machine. I want you to think about and tell the story of when you decided to franchise your business.
Not sure the exact moment I decided to franchise my business, but I had always been a big fan of McDonald's and what Ray Kroc had done for the McDonald's brothers business. And as early as 2 years into me running the Rubbish Boys, I remember we got a big evening news feature on Global News. And at the end, the interviewer said, so what's next? And I said, I don't know, maybe we'll franchise. So that was always in my mind. And I, about 8 years in at $1 million in revenue, started to look at the franchise model, but I was so overwhelmed by how do you create that? All the legal agreements, how do you systematize the business? And I remember Cameron Harold, who was a good friend at the time in my entrepreneur organization forum, he said, you know who you should talk to is Paul Guy. Paul Guy worked with College Pro and I think was still at the time working with College Pro Painters. He understood franchising. He understood how to find great franchise partners. You should give him a call. And that was the intro, the start of Paul and I meeting.
And we just kind of chatted and hit it off. I was really interested in his story. And I was really passionate about working with entrepreneurs. And had some experience with young entrepreneurs, kind of training and coaching them. So we just started a conversation and it went from there.
Talk about how long you worked together and the ups and the downs of that relationship.
I think it was a couple of years of working together, maybe a little bit less. And one of the big projects was, there were two things. One, how do you create manuals out of every best practice we had in the business? And Paul clearly understood and had in front of him College Pro Painters manuals. And we said, okay, how do we replicate that organization of here's step by step how you do everything? So we started creating manuals and processes together. But I think the real big thing was, how do you find franchise owners? Who are they? What do they look like? How do we find them? And I remember one of my favorite moments was we created this event at the University of British Columbia, UBC. We put posters up everywhere, trash your summer, become an entrepreneur. We partnered with Jones Soda and we were giving out blue and green, the colors of 1-800-GOT-JUNK sodas to students with labels on them saying, come learn more about how you can be an entrepreneur this summer and start a franchise with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. We had a goal of 15 franchise owners, all students who would run a business for a summer. And we just got out there, and Paul was a recruiting machine. We were talking to people, we were inviting them in, we were having interviews. And it seemed like before you knew it, we had 15 franchise owners. Every spot was filled across British Columbia. And off we went, taking the manuals and systems. Paul trained everybody at the Arbutus Club. We did a bit of that together. And we had a great summer. These entrepreneurs did anything but trash their summer. They had a great summer. They all made a ton of money. But I think, as Paul remembers, our model was flawed. They made money. We didn't make enough. It was a short summer season of 4 months of revenue production when we really realized, wow, we need something that's full-time year-round, which clearly led us down a path of where we are today.
That would have been the summer of 1998. And I remember certainly the time leading up to and including the training sessions, working really long hours to build the training systems. We were simultaneously recruiting and hiring franchisees, building training systems, and setting up training sessions. So it was some long hours, but it was fun. And then we got them trained up and they started. And I vividly remember Brian's fleet, and we realized like we were essentially kind of renting trucks to franchisees, and they needed a fair bit of work.
We had some amazing people, Jesse, Tyler, Catherine, just like incredible people that were really, they embodied our culture. And I think Paul did an incredible job recruiting and getting them on board with the culture. But it was funny, you asked one question, which was, what was our relationship like? And it's interesting because Paul and I today are very good friends and love what Paul's been a part of and how we've built this together. And we've had an amazing time. But there was a point where I don't know if I was a big Paul fan, and I felt like someone that got along with everybody. And what it was it was the first time my leadership had been challenged. Paul, one of your gifts is always to just lay it out like it is. You've got an opinion, you'll share it. And you had some great ideas. And I remember I was like, no, it's not done that way. And I hadn't been, as a young leader, used to being challenged. And so what felt like Paul and I butting heads at times was really, I think, my own ego not being comfortable with or used to having someone tell me this couldn't be done. And it was me being able to realize, wow, Paul is onto something here. And I stopped being the smartest guy in the room and realized I was surrounding myself with people like Paul who were much smarter that I needed to learn to listen to.
And I just think that it was a great lesson for both Brian and I, how to work together as leaders and be able to coexist, solve problems. And both of us put our ego aside a little bit. And, we learned that. We learned together that being right isn't the most important thing. It's coming to the best solution.
Brian, any memories of specifically you two working in the truck together?
Yeah, we were a bunch of clowns. Like, we would have fun working in the trucks together for sure. And that fun showed with the customers, because every single job and everyone, we would show up and we just wouldn't lose a job. Paul and I didn't have people cancel. We'd show up and we'd find out, what will it take, Mr. or Mrs. Customer, to make this job happen? And Paul has the gift of the gab, and he would just sit there and say to people like, wow, what a beautiful garden. You love roses? Gee, and somehow made conversation and built rapport, and everyone loved us and we had fun and we just didn't lose jobs. And we left feeling a sense of winning. So I remember when we would manage franchise partners or employees out there hauling junk, we just couldn't understand how they were losing business and saying no. And it just set the bar high for us.
I just remember being young and having a super fun time and just thinking, like, we can do anything. This is going to work. I just remember thinking, Brian's right. We would just go to customers' houses and just talk to them and haul their junk, and it was fun and they loved us, and it just felt like anything was possible, really.
Brian, tell the story of securing the phone number of 1-800-CUT-JUNK.
It was phone call after phone call of trying to do detective work to figure out who owned the phone number. And not only was there no answer, it said the number you have called is not available in your service area. So I'm like, does that mean it's not available at all? No, someone owns it. And we couldn't figure out who owned it. And so we got everybody I knew and Paul knew throughout the United States to make phone calls from different states and people from New York and California and Texas. And everyone's like, nope, I get the same greeting. And privacy laws wouldn't let us find out who owned the number. So I can't remember how it ended up happening, but we found out that the one state that I didn't have any friends in was Idaho. Small state, not as populated. And we figured out, we got someone from Idaho to call. The number was the Department of Transportation's hotline for traffic reports. So, oh gosh, that's nothing could be worse. There's no way they're going to give that phone number up.
And luckily, there's no traffic in Idaho.
There you go. There you go. So after phone call, I go, who controls the phones at the Department of Transportation? And it was a guy named Michael. And I phone the phone room and I get him. And after three phone calls to him, he's like, you know what? I don't know why you want the number. Clearly, it's important to you. The number's yours. Here's the AT&T form signed off. We don't use it that much. The number's yours. And a couple of days later, when I remember we talked about, let's send his team out for dinner. Let's send him and his wife out for dinner. Let's do something. 2 days later, we called and I'm sorry, Michael's no longer with the company. No idea what happened, but we got the number. Michael.
That was his parting gift.
That was his parting gift. So Paul, what happened for you to go from your day-to-day operation of that business and working alongside Brian to May 26, 1999, opening your business in Toronto?
Well, I think like lots of stories, it's a confluence of circumstances. As you well know, David, I had at that point met my current wife, who had been spending the summer in Vancouver and had then moved back to Toronto. So I was kind of looking for a reason to potentially move to Toronto. And I knew Brian wanted to expand. And at the point where I was, I think Brian, you'd agree, we actually weren't really ready to franchise in kind of when you and I talked, because there was no franchise agreement. You know, the manuals, I was still writing them and Brian was editing them. We weren't really ready, but I had kind of been to a couple of headhunters in Toronto and spoken with them about potential opportunities. And one of them said to me, what are you doing now in Vancouver? And I handed her my business card. And then she handed me her business card and said, well, you should really start this business here in Toronto. And if you do, I got this massive freezer in my basement that I really need to get rid of. So here's my card. Call me if you ever do anything with it. So then I went back and flew back to Vancouver and went into Brian's office and said, hey, I know, you know, we're not really ready, but it doesn't really matter. You're an entrepreneur. I'm an entrepreneur. I don't need, you know, that much support other than just your help if I need it. And what do you say? I think I want to move to Toronto and get this thing started.
And Brian, your memory of that?
And my memory is a little different, which is funny. I remember a moment when we were butting heads and it was just the straw that broke the camel's back. I don't know what the straw was. And I remember going into your office and something we disagreed in gone. And then I was like, I lost my cool. And I'm like, this is not working out. And you're like, no, it's not. Well, what should we do? And I said, I just think that we're done. This can't work. Clearly it's not working. Well, what do you want me to do? Maybe we should end it now. Okay. And you know, it turned into this kind of, I walked back out of the office and I remember just going, this is awful. I feel crappy in my own business, and hid in my office for a couple of days. And my impression was that you were going to leave the business. I don't know if I formally said, like, get out of here, but I thought we were done and had that moment. And then I remember days later, you're still there. And I remember walking into the office and said, have you ever thought of being the first franchise in Toronto? And I remember the moment of our eyes lighting up, both of us, over the opportunity. And then the discussion happened. So, I mean, hey, how many years ago was this? Like 25 plus years ago, and our memories have faded.
Yeah, 23, 24 years ago. Yeah.
Long time ago. Yeah. But that was my memory.
So, Paul, you know, lots of circumstances to make the decision to move to Toronto, girlfriend living in Toronto, some conflict with Brian, the opportunity from a headhunter to say, hey, there's probably a real business here, or at least you've got one customer that you can move to. So you make the decision. What was your financial commitment to get into business for Toronto at 1-800-GOT-JUNK?
Well, I was not very financially flush at the time. But luckily, I had a brother who lived in Toronto who signed a line of credit for me for $25,000 and also gave a personal guarantee on my first truck, which I had set up, kind of flown out and set up in Toronto so I could pick it up. And then I moved there in February, and shortly after I arrived, a few weeks after I arrived, I was, you know, okay, I went ready to pick up the truck. And the guy said, yeah, sorry, I sold that truck to somebody else. I don't have that truck.
How about that?
Like, well, I said, but we had a signed agreement. He's like, yeah, I know. I feel really bad about that. Sorry. So I was all set up to start my junk business that spring, and I had no truck. And I guess trucks were in a shortage at that point. Finally, I don't know, Brian, if you had a contact in Vancouver or I just cold called every dealership. But eventually I found a dealership that had a truck in Vancouver. I'm like, I got to get this thing started. So I flew out, and Brian helped and helped get the box built and helped get everything arranged. And then I picked up the truck in Vancouver. And
I remember you drove 4,300 plus kilometers across the country. And I remember when you left Vancouver and you called me from Abbotsford, which is probably an hour and a half away. And you had your life's belongings, a couch and marketing material and everything you needed. And it was flying out the back because your tarp had ripped and come untied. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like you just left Vancouver. You've got probably 4,200 kilometers left. How is this going to go? But it is amazing.
I think we got a few jobs in Abbotsford that day, though, because all that marketing material flew out of my truck, right? Yeah, my wife's uncle Ken said to me on the day that I arrived, he said, my sister told me that you're starting a business in junk removal. Are you crazy? And I said, I hope not. He said, well, you know, the city takes anything for free. They have bulk pickup here. I don't know. They must not have that where in Vancouver, because here it's free, which was a concern at the time. But it was interesting because I drove the truck in and I got there in the evening and I just happened to go on JunkNet, which is our scheduling software, just to kind of poke around and make sure it was set up properly. And there was a job on it for the next day. I'm like, how the heck did that happen? I just got here. And I literally did my first job the day after the truck arrived, and I arrived. $576, I remember. And my wife, Nicole, still remembers me. I mean, I was the only employee, but I still came home, filled out the truck journal, and figured out how much profit share a truck team member would have earned that day had it been an employee who had worked that day, because I wanted to really understand everything.
So that's the power of the brand, of just having the truck visible and having that first customer. You made a phone call to Brian, didn't you, when you found out that there was a free bulk pickup in Toronto? And
the decision had already been made. I had the truck. Like I was, and I just thought, I'm just going to go for it. And then I just started marketing like crazy, signs on telephone poles, post-it notes, everything I could at a grassroots level at a very low cost. And then, as Brian mentioned, when we worked in the trucks together, I just didn't let any job cancel. I would do any job, oftentimes by myself in the truck. I had a friend of a friend who would come and help me from time to time if things were too heavy for one person. But it's interesting because not long after my phone call to Brian saying, I don't know how this is going to work, the city takes it for free, I remember calling him and saying, you can't book a job for 8 days. It is totally packed my schedule for 8 days straight. You can't get a job. And that's when I knew that I knew it was going to work.
And then you started adding trucks. I remember you first summer, one truck, two trucks. And then you said, okay, I want to do $1 million in my first full calendar year. What will it take? You reverse engineered and you said, it's going to need 6 trucks. And so you went out and bought 4 more trucks and you're up to a fleet of 6 and you made a million happen.
Yeah, amazing. It was, I think he kind of egged me on and said, hey, it took me 10 years to make $1 million. I think you can do it in your first year. And I said, okay. So then went for it and we did $1,010,000. So we just squeaked over the line. So that was fun.
Amazing. What's the size of your business today in Toronto in terms of trucks, employees, revenue?
Yeah, we're about 30 trucks, about $14 million in revenue. It was a little more than that before the pandemic, but Toronto's been hit pretty hard by the pandemic, but we're happy to say we're going to have our biggest November ever this month. So that's a great feeling after 2 pretty tough years. I've got a 16-member leadership team, and at our height, we're somewhere between 120 and 150 truck team members in the field.
Amazing. Congratulations. So, Paul, take us back to when you went from operating and owning one franchise to operating and owning a second franchise, where you were well on your way to kind of building an empire within 1-800 Got Junk.
Yeah, I mean, the first several years I was completely consumed by building Toronto and just worked solely on that 15 hours a day. But eventually I was able to bring on a leadership team, and that took a lot of the pressure off. And that kind of allowed me to at least consider maybe making some other investments. And our first franchise that we did outside of Toronto was in New York City. And I remember I spent a lot of time on that one, recruiting GMs, training. It was a huge market to figure out. I spent a lot of time in New York in the first couple of years, but pretty quick it became apparent that that was going to be a success. And at that point, most of the major markets in North America had been purchased, and really there weren't many resales. People weren't selling franchises a lot at that point. So a friend and a business partner of mine, Tom Ritma, kind of poked around, and we had just started in Sydney and Brisbane, Australia, but Melbourne was still available. So I had been in Hawaii at the time, and I called Tom and said, hey, let's go check out Melbourne. So we flew. He flew from San Francisco, met me in Hawaii, and we went to Melbourne, and super cool city. We bamboozled Brian into selling us Melbourne, and got the guy at the time who was running Brisbane to move there to start it. And now we have 4 franchises in Australia. We own Melbourne, Brisbane, Sydney, and the Gold Coast, and do $12-13 million a year in Australia, and it's growing fast. It's doing really well. Justin, our business partner on the ground, is awesome.
What's the total revenue today of your entire holdings?
In excess of $100 million.
Yeah. Remarkable.
Totally. It is remarkable.
Took me 8 years to get to $1 million, and Paul does it in his first full calendar year.
Both of you have a superpower that is providing people an opportunity to learn and grow and to realize their potential. Paul, maybe you can speak a little bit about your philosophy of people and people management and people leadership.
I try and find people who are eager for an opportunity, are not afraid to work hard, are open to learning and coaching, and are willing to speak their mind and tell me what they think. And I think that's a good combination. And I think that if you provide people with the right skill development and the right culture, and to provide them with opportunities, they will grow your business, because people want to own things. People want to own their jobs. They want to be responsible for the things that are under their purvey. And I've always tried to create an environment that lets someone take the reins and be responsible for their job, and not breathe down their neck so much as provide them support so that they could own their goals. And I always saw my job as helping them to achieve their goals. And within the business, that helped the business grow and helped the people grow.
We've always said, find the right people, treat them right, but providing opportunity. Paul has more people that he's helped get into an ownership position in 1-800-GOT-JUNK than anyone on the planet. I mean, he's created so many entrepreneurs.
all, what has this opportunity to work with 1-800-GOT-JUNK provided you and your family?
Well, I now have 4 children, my oldest of which is in 3rd year university, and my youngest is in 8th grade. And it's provided me with a life, an opportunity to build a life for myself and my family. Very, very fortunate that I've been able to build what I consider to be a pretty good life. And I don't work as hard as I used to, which frees up my time now after 20 years to spend more time with my family, more time pursuing personal interests. But I'm still driven by the pursuit of providing opportunities for others. And that's still exciting to me. So really, 1-800-GOT-JUNK has provided me with the opportunity to build a great life. And it has allowed me the luxury of providing that same opportunity to many other people.
Not many franchise partners own a home in Hawaii, right? You've really built some amazing things for your family and all that you've all created together. It's phenomenal. It really, truly is.
Paul, thanks for sharing your founder story with us.
My pleasure. And thanks to you, David, for years of friendship and working together, and to Brian for providing us all with the opportunity that has allowed us to build great lives for ourselves and our people.
Bigger and better together. Thanks for listening to another episode of Founder Stories. I'm Brian Scudamore. I love hearing stories from founders. I'm curious what resonated with you. Tell me on Instagram, LinkedIn, or go to my YouTube channel to learn more.